Hi, my name is Steve.
Hi, my name is Elise Willems.
Elise, why don't you tell everyone about yourself?
I am a multifaceted person.
I thought you were about to say like everybody-selling album.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a lot of exclusives. No, I like to think of myself as a multidimensional person, like a lot of people think of themselves. I try to bring good content to the internet, whether it's performing or producing or writing. For everyone that's watching and not listening, I've got a giant chicken nugget behind me. So that's pretty much everything you need to know.
We were really sad because I was saying it looked very fuzzy before the show started, and she was like, no, it's greasy. And I'm really sad now because I just want you to pet the chicken nugget. I don't know why.
I'll do the little, like, Kids in the Hall crushing your head pet of the chicken nugget.
This show is already off to such the opposite of the normal show. You have always been somebody who focuses on both the humor and the positive and serious sides of life. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show, because, you know, this show is all about getting to know you and letting people learn from all the things that you've accomplished and you have faced along the way. Normally, I start out with the who's and the where's. And you know what? The thing is, everybody can Google that because you are internet famous. So, well, let's just skip right to the part where...
In quotation marks.
Yeah, well, you know, we all are for a minute. Let's just skip to the part where we start asking you the hard-hitting questions like, where did you get the chicken nugget? I need to know this.
So some friends of mine gave me the chicken nugget as a birthday gift, and not realizing themselves how large the chicken nugget was going to be. So now I just have this chicken nugget body pillow, and I take it everywhere.
I like how the story is essentially, I just got this pillow, I don't know, it exists. But it was like an awkward gift, and you're like, I mean, I have to use it, I don't have a choice.
No, I appreciate it, and it came from the best place.
Aww.
Like, the best intentions. Do you have anything like that, Steve, where you have this object and you're like, it's cumbersome, but now I have it and it's mine?
You know, I have a rule against answering questions from guests, but for this one, I can honestly answer and say no. I don't think I have anything. I don't think I have anything strange that's around my house other than like my cat. Maybe my cat will qualify for that question because I don't know. Nobody's ever given me a chicken nugget. And now I'm kind of afraid that I've said that on the internet. Now my P.O. box is going to fill up. With chicken nuggets.
Let me just see, writing that down. Steve does not have chicken nuggets.
Gosh darn it. Sponsor us, McDonald's. Anyway, man, this podcast is already off the rails. Okay, bringing it back.
Sorry.
The worst part about podcasting with your friends is it just goes so off the rails so easy. Okay, back to, we're trying to be serious here, Lee. Sorry, let's put on serious faces. All right, yeah, okay. All right, good. Let's do like the actor thing where you like move your hand in front of your face, like just, there you go. Nice. See, professional.
I did it too soon. Well,
you know what? The people who are listening on the podcast couldn't see it, so it's fine.
I'm just trying to reconcile the fact that you made a podcast, Steve, where you can interrogate people and not have to answer to anything yourself.
It's the greatest. My rules, my neon sign above your head. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I like that. It's Steve above me.
That's right. I want people to know that there's an iron branding above everybody. Like.
Any minute the Steve could
That's
drop.
Right. That, say the wrong thing, you're getting a sign dropped on your head.
I'm serious.
So, take me back to the beginning. Where did you grow up?
So, I am from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I was born in 1986.
So I grew up...
Yeah. Let me give you my my social insurance number. That's our Canadian equivalent of the social security number. It's funny because when I moved to America, I was essentially a baby. Like, in terms of... I should get to that. I'm getting ahead of myself. But yeah, I was a 90s kid, and I very much appreciate having grown up in an era that's, I sort of straddled the line of the analog versus the digital era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so I had a toe in what life was like without cell phones and constant bombardment of media and the digital space and social media, but then also get to kind of reap the benefits of living in an advanced and really opportunistic era in a lot of ways. And that lets you, if you're a creative person, have so many more outlets to do that. And so, yeah, I grew up and had a modest upbringing in Toronto, did all the Canadian kid things, ice skating, being covered in hockey pads so I could be the goalie in net.
Is it just mandatory? You had to love hockey? Like, they just, like, you're born in Canada and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I love hockey now.
Yeah, it is kind of one of those things where if you don't like hockey, people look at you weird.
Yeah, honestly, from being from Pittsburgh, I get it. I really get it.
Yeah, that's a hockey town, too. Yes, it is. Yeah, and when I was a kid, I thought that for a long time, I thought that I would be an artist or an author, and had kind of a negative experience when I was applying to an art school around when I was like 12, 13 years old, and wasn't accepted, and that kind of like tarnished my love of art, which I'm sure we'll talk about later in the show. Those things, those heavy things where maybe your dreams get crushed and you have to pick yourself up and keep moving on.
Yeah, I have to lure you into a false sense of security first. So go ahead, talk about the happy times.
Yeah. I came out of high school and kind of had this perception of what should I be doing with my life? And I really, as a kid, was very, very creative, but kind of, I don't know, got it into my head that I sort of needed to be doing something more serious. And I went to the University of Toronto and got a degree in political science, which is like, you know, so far removed from my life now. I thought maybe I would be a journalist or a pundit or go into law in some capacity or be lobbying or something that, you know, was not being a politician, but tertiary to it.
Right.
Could
you actually see yourself there now?
Could I see myself doing that now? I mean, absolutely not.
No?
Absolutely not. I do really like history, though, and I love, like, there's certain time periods of political discourse that I really, really enjoy, like the Cold War and stuff, like, you know, reading about or learning about. And I think, like, when you look at the... I'm sorry, I'm such a rambler, and I feel like I'm totally just digressing now.
No, this is great. No, I think it's great. It's about thinking you were going to be one thing and changing course to what you actually ended up doing. So no, please continue.
It was. And I had one of those experiences too, where it's the complete inverse of what you would expect, because there's this school in Toronto that does a comedy program where you do comedy writing and performance, and you just kind of like, you even might do stand up or something like that. And when I was applying to schools, my mom came to me and said, "Are you going to apply for this comedy program?" And I kind of looked at her like I was the judgmental parent, and I was like, "Are you nuts, woman?" Like, I'm applying to these political science programs, I'm applying to journalism programs. I think I even like submitted to a psychology program, and I was like, "No, absolutely not. I'm not doing this. I'm gonna have a real career." Little did I know that that was not the case. What was going to happen.
That's the great part about the era that we live in, right? Is a real career is anything that you get paid for. So, you know, what eventually led you to content creation? How did you end up taking that hard U-turn out of becoming the next Fox correspondent to...
Well, you know me, I still have my very, very strong beliefs. Yep. So even though I'm not, you know, up there on the Fox panel, I'm just kidding. So, I mean, honestly,
I remember you told me about that for a good hour yesterday.
Yeah. there's a podcast we record just for Steve and I.
Yeah. Flat Earthers. Which,
yeah. Opinion Yell. But yeah. So honestly, the honest answer is like, and it's such a stupid answer, but is love, because my husband is American and he was living in Los Angeles. And we had a long distance relationship and had to decide, you know, who was going to go where. And he had a pretty like strong career here already. So when it came, and I was did not have a strong career. I was working like 3 part-time jobs, one of which was remote, and I didn't really have a footing in something. So it just made sense for me to come to Los Angeles. And one of the first, I had some random jobs, like working for producer, working at a talent casting company, and someone that was a friend of ours said, "I know that GTTV, Game Trailers TV with Jeff Keighley, is hiring for a production assistant. I think you would be really, really great for..." I love how the captions Jeff Keighley is spelled. Sorry,
yeah, spelled exactly as he intended. Yeah.
So she said, "I think you would be really great for this. You should totally apply for this." And having no confidence, I said, "There's no way." But still did it anyway. And I was very, very fortunate, because my boss, Jeremy, there, like, took a chance on me, took a complete chance on me. And that was kind of like my foot in the door to getting into content creation and gaming, and just being able to work a job where I get to be creative
all the time. And everybody knows you said boyfriend Jimmy, right? So everybody knows him. But you being a content creator, you know, and standing in your own right, I mean, how was that? And like, you know, everybody always talks about when their family member is also in the spotlight, it creates this shadow. You know, how was it getting away from that, standing on your own?
I still can't get away from it, Steve.
Yeah. Well, damn that, Jimmy.
It is tough because, especially I think when the dynamic is that it's you're a woman and it's your husband too, people read into that in a completely negative way sometimes. And I do think, like, conversely to that, my husband and I have like a really fantastic working relationship, and we, like, James and I are really good at creating together. So that's been a fantastic part of it. And I think it's a testament too to like the strength of your relationship when you can be working together and have those creative differences. And then still at the end of the day, you're like, we still love each other and want to spend time with each other, even when we're not at work. Is a good benchmark.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, do you think that the creating together has helped with strengthening that relationship?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, we just enjoy it too, and we make each other laugh.
Oh, that's probably one of the keys right there, is just being able to make, I mean, being able to make your significant other laugh, being able to make your friends laugh. I mean, that's just, you know, a superpower that you have. You're good at comedy. But how has that been for you and your continued growth away from pundit to now creative personality? Have you found a lot of those skills carrying over? Did you have to train yourself along the way?
Oh, absolutely. Everything that I feel like I do in my career, especially in entertainment, a lot of it is like self-learned or just learning on the job, spending my free time learning different skills too. And like, it's weird because you ask this question of like, how do you take an education in like political science, something that feels not bland, but it feels devoid of any fun, really, right? And then apply that to making internet videos. But I think that someone like Conan O'Brien is a great example of someone. He's like such a history buff. He's one of my heroes, and he's such a history buff. But when he gets just waxing poetical and riffing on, like, these are the tanks that were used in World War II, and here's what's funny about these tanks. It's like something that nobody else would ever have the background to do. Mm-hmm. And I love to work in a good joke about the escalation spiral, you know, or nuclear deterrence. These are the things I love.
Yeah. You know, but internet content, when you're trying to get a laugh, who doesn't like to think about nuclear fallout, you know?
Yeah. the real answer is no, there is no crossover. I was kidding.
No, I really like that, especially the answer of Conan as well. I mean, definitely, I'm a fan as well. You know, you and I have gotten to talk about how awesome that guy is here and there. But I think that's sort of one of the purposes for this podcast, was to kind of get to showcase that. Because the one thing that I really despise about the entertainment industry, and I speak about it as an umbrella, is that it really, really pigeonholes us. Like, you are funny funhouse. I am accessibility guy. And that is, like, what we are. And people kind of show up and they're like, all right, at least make me laugh. And you're like, no? You know, and it's rough.
Well, and here's the thing, too, is, like, while you make a lot of points, be it on Twitter or in your videos, where you're talking about accessibility, but I never, and I'll be like, yeah, Steve's right, but I never want to, don't take this the wrong way, Steve, but I never want to hear you talk about accessibility. All
right, well, that was the end of the show. Thanks for coming on, Elisa.
Oh, no! Well, no, it's I want to hear what Steve thinks about X thing, or I want to talk with Steve about a movie. Yeah. And I appreciate that you talk about all those things, but it's not the stuff that I necessarily feel like I'm digging a hole here. Because what I'm trying to say is, I think that you are, you contain multitudes, Steve.
Man, that's where I wish my arms would work, so I could just start making the shovel motion. Just like, go ahead, keep on talking. No, seriously though. No, I appreciate the compliment. And I feel like a lot of the people out there listening, all three of them, you know, could really really take some wisdom from that, because I think we all kind of get pigeonholed into what we're just kind of known for. And we're all three-dimensional people, right? You and I have talked about this off the air, before. You are known as Funny Lady, and that's what you do, is you make people laugh. Our friends have referred to you as, you know, funniest girl on the internet multiple times. Chill just said that like 3 days ago.
No.
So, you know, it's one of those things where, what do you do when you feel like you're being pigeonholed? Do you buck against it? How do you deal with it?
I feel like I used to really rally against that feeling of, like, I don't want to feel like this is how someone perceives me. I want to completely rewrite the script on how people perceive me, what they think of me, and what they think I do and can do. And I do think it is a grace of getting older that each year that sort of chips away less and less, where you feel less and less like you need to fit into someone else's perception of who you need to be. As somebody that who a lot of my life, it mattered a lot to me what people thought of me. And we talk about this, Steve, where we feel like we're people pleasers. Yeah. And you do feel like you need to make other people feel comfortable, or you need to, you know, everyone needs to be happy at all times. I feel less and less like I need someone else's opinion to validate me. And it's a really great feeling. Like, I encourage it for everyone. Try it sometime.
That is a freeing sensation of, it's okay to like attention, but just make sure you don't need attention.
Yeah, and I do think that's something when you have any kind of following online, especially because it's a really new kind of, like, quote-unquote celebrity, is you do get really hooked on the validation. You get hooked on the chemical reaction that comes with the instant feedback. Mm-hmm. And I do think that I've been on this, like, wave trajectory for, you know, the last almost decade of my life, where I'm, like, I'm coming off of that a little bit. And I'm, like, looking for, you know, do I really appreciate people saying kind things to me, giving me compliments in my work? I'm trying to, less and less, to feel like that is the resource of self-validation. It should be something where I appreciate it and I feel grateful for it. But that shouldn't be where in my life I feel like I'm winning because I'm getting that kind of feedback.
What do you think was the catalyst that began your journey into understanding that?
That's a great and hard question. It could just be, I mean, it could be a lot of things. It could just be, like, just growth, just getting older and feeling like you're understanding the world more. It could be just spending more time in this world of online creation and feeling like I'm seeing those peaks and valleys and, wow, like, I don't want to ride this high. And I don't know. God, Steve. It's such a tough question. I try to do, like, I think I'm kind of an introspective person, so I just try to think about this sort of stuff a lot, where I'm like, what is really making me happy? And okay, here's an answer for you.
She's playing at the camera, she's getting serious.
Just when you know, I think sometimes when you go through, like, really stressful periods of your life and then you come out of those, you have to have those introspective spots where you think, like, well, what was it all worth? Mm. Like, I just went through this really, really stressful time, and what did I learn coming out of it? Like, when I, you know, if I stressed over a big work project coming up, what was the lesson learned? That, oh, I can work really hard, or I should be having a better time doing it? Because something that I wrestle with is not enjoying the ride. And I don't know if you ever feel this way.
Yeah, no, it's a trite saying, but something I'm fond of saying as well is, things are sayings in our pop culture for a reason. And when they say it's about the destination, not, you know, that's not true. It is the journey. It's what did you learn along the way? What did you gain from that, you know, stressful period? Because everything comes to an end. And, you know, the whole smile because it happened, not don't frown because it's over. It's people look at it as us, Dr. Seuss, it's childhood, you know, thing. But it's also a very important life lesson. And, you know, it actually brings me circular back to something you had said before that I feel like fits in here perfectly. You know, you had said a great quote that I don't want to step on because I want you to say it for the audience about how you view life.
It's how I'm trying to view life, and I don't know if I'm, like, fully succeeding, but I'm trying more and more in that life isn't a dress rehearsal.
That's great.
If you want something or you want to be something, like, you can't be thinking, well, I'll just suffer now for the next 5 years. Right. And then, you know, I'll work my way to it, or I'll get it. You have to try and just, like, live in the moment and be happy and appreciative and not think so much, like, because I think I'm very, very guilty of being like, I'll just go through this year of pain. Of absolute pain, because it's gonna pay off later, and then I'm not enjoying anything about my experience.
You have to be able to go through life. And the reason that I picked up so hard, so there's always a beginning before the podcast and which I get to talk to the guest room. And Elise had mentioned that view. And I was like, we have to tell everybody about this because it's not something I've heard before. And when you read as many philosophy books as I do, you've heard most everything before in some version or another. And that was actually really insightful because we do live in a society that very much aims for perfection all the time. And perfection as a concept, it's very hard to obtain. Some would say unobtainable. You know, when you're talking about things like that, Elise, do you think that iteration is the way to go and just do things off the cuff? Or are you somebody who plans meticulously so that everything is as perfect as it can be?
Oh yeah. I'm not like a super spontaneous person. So I'm not kind of like drop everything and travel the world. I definitely like to plan stuff, but I think for me, a lot of it is like, try to stop living with the anxiety of things are not 100% perfect, so I just can't let myself feel happy. And try to see what the small goodness or small happiness is in whatever you're going through at any time. And just a lot of it's like finding a healthy balance. I think this last year too was a wake-up call for so many people of, man, I am actually unhappy with what I'm doing. Yes. Or I don't have a good balance in my life.
Have you found that balance?
I'm trying. Yeah. I'm really trying. And I'm trying to do things that just bring me happiness that aren't necessarily like a side hustle or like, because I don't know about you, but I think a lot about like so much of my life, your life, the things that we enjoy, we monetize.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, I need to have things in my life that I don't try to assign like, oh, I want people to be impressed because I'm doing this, or I want to make money from this. Like, I just want to do this because I'm like a kid playing in the dirt and it just is enjoyable.
I think that's one of the hard things, right? So they always have that little phrase of, you know, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. The problem is that it's kind of a false statement because then, you know, then all your hobbies are now, you know, money makers and you don't have anything for fun.
Yes. I'm so glad that you said that, because I used to really feel like you do what you love, you're never going to work. Like that adage to me was, I used to look at entertainment and careers in entertainment and think that's the life. And those dreams are for other people. Like those aren't dreams for me. But then you work in it and you're like, oh, it is hard. Mm-hmm. It is difficult. And there are still like challenges. But the thing that I also recently came across was someone said basically what you said, which is, you will not stop working.
Yeah.
If you do what you love, you will not stop working because it is so ingrained. And then it is just so what you do.
Consider yourself somebody who follows your head or your heart.
My head, Steve. It makes me really sad.
You're so sad about that answer. Aww.
I wish I followed my heart more. I think I'm like trying to.
Yeah.
And do you, what do you consider yourself?
I very much like to think that I follow my aspirations. I don't know about you, and this is where, that's why we're here for My Name is Elise Willems. I mean, it's, you know, what is it that you're thinking, you know, on your horizons as you think next? Like, if you're going to follow your heart, what's, you know, what is in your future? What is on the horizon?
I think we put so much stake into following your dreams means following a career objective too. And I do that, and I do that all the time. And it's like a mindset I'm trying to get out of less. I still have like a ton of big career dreams because I really, really like to write. And someday I would love to be writing, whether it's a show of my own or writing on someone else's, a show that really feels like, and be it comedy or whatever, probably comedy, but it feels like it has a ton of heart to it. You know, those shows where somebody watches it and thinks like, oh, this didn't just pick up my mood. This gave me a new perspective, or it really like helped bolster my life in some way. I feel like Parks and Rec or The Good Place, any of those like Mike Schur shows where they feel like they have that 20% heart.
Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso. Yeah. Like one of those shows where it just really feels like it's making the world a better place by the maybe empathetic lessons it's teaching people. I would love to be doing something like that someday. But then I try to think of outside of career stuff, and I'm like, that is where I hit a wall and things get tough.
Shows like Scrubs can make us laugh and make us feel at the same time. And I think you'd do great in writing one of those shows. You already have written a book. You already are a published author. You know?
Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome. And
I don't think I've gotten there yet, though.
No? You don't think you earned the title published author?
Well, self-published. Self-published.
Okay. Why do you draw a line of demarcation there?
Because I have a 35-year history of self-deprecation.
All right, Conan. No, but I think this is a great topic to dive into. You know, we often set our own goalposts and then we move them. So, you know, why do you think that you had this desire to publish a book? You did it, and then you moved the goalposts. Now you're not willing to say you're published. Why do you think that is?
I don't know about you, but I do think that it's been beaten into me in the digital creator space that because it's not like a traditional medium, mm-hmm. like television or, you know, film, it's not legitimate. Like, there's this whole idea that, like, you create content online, you're making content for YouTube or in the digital space, and it's not seen. You can get millions of views, but it just doesn't have that same legitimization as if you're making a show that airs on NBC. And that's changing a bit because of streaming services being so popular. And I think that the line is blurring more. But it got really beaten into my psyche over the years, and I'm trying to get past it. And I am proud of the stuff that I do. And I think that you can publish a book with a publisher and get like a tepid reaction. I had a lot of people reach out to me in a really, really positive way, which made up so much more than if I had published it and heard from no one. Again, I'm so rambly, Steve. I'm sorry.
you answered the question. That's great. You know, and I listen, my cat is going to love this episode. So, no, but I think that's a great point, is that we artificially make these boxes that we then put ourselves in. And, you know, you obviously have had some success breaking out of that, and you're continuing to work on that. So, you know, to dive into that end of the pool, what do you think is the real key to being able to break that mentality of someone else's mold for me? You know, I have to fit into it. I have to be a published author because, damn it, the industry says I do. Meanwhile, you sold thousands of books or however many you did. You know, somebody out there who's listening who has only sold 100 books and or their podcast has only gotten 100 viewers. You know, how do you help break out of that? Well, you must have NBC numbers to feel happy.
I think figuring out what you're going to look back at and be proud of is so important, because there's, again, we talked about it earlier, just not seeking validation from other people. And I have experiences where I've created stuff that nobody really watched, but I was so proud of it and look back at it with extreme pride. And that's, I think, a personal growth benchmark that I'm trying to get to, which is just create the things that I'm going to look back on years later and feel really good about, or my mom is gonna like call me and she's gonna be gushing about, like, that's it is a weird brain-breaking society that we've gotten into now, where people are seeking so much validation from other people, and it can feel really destructive in a lot of ways.
Do you view yourself as extroverted?
I feel like people might think that I say it to sound cool. I don't. I think about this stuff a lot, but I kind of think of myself as an ambivert. Okay. Where best of both worlds, where like there are points where performing and being out there, I do enjoy it and I love it. And it's like a really high experience. But then I get home and I'm like, I need to just not see anyone for 3 days. If I talk to another person, I am just going to like collapse. And I think that some of that is because I have a big deal of social anxiety. So I'm the kind of person that a party's happening in 3 weeks and I'm thinking about this party that's going to happen. And, you know, okay, well, when you walk in, make sure you pull the door because it's not a push. It's a pull. Like I think about, I'm constantly thinking. So yeah, I like to be kind of alone to decompress.
Okay, so how do you slow yourself down when your brain is just caught in that hyper loop of thinking and analyzing over and over?
I come home I come up here to my office. I just grip my nugget and I close my eyes.
I love that "I grip my nugget" is now a quote on the internet. I can't wait.
If you want to put that on a t-shirt and sell it,
please.
Steve, I am,
that's going in the sizzle reel for sure.
I grip my nugget. What was the question? I'm sorry. I got in my dumb little diatribe and I didn't answer your question.
No, what do you do when your brain gets caught in that hyper loop of analyzation?
More and more as I try to be really, you know, introspective with myself and think through my feelings. That's something I think I didn't do a lot in my younger life, was experience a feeling and then be like, take that moment and stop and think, okay, why am I feeling this way? And how do I not feel this way? And what are, because with anxiety and social hangups, sometimes I feel like you're just not having that moment where you analyze a situation and think, well, what is really causing me this? Am I anxious because I have to like go talk to this person? Or am I anxious because I feel like they're going to be judging me when I have to do this? Like just taking that moment and taking a step back and then saying to yourself, like, I don't want to say like, I hate the thing, the mentality of like telling yourself you're crazy, because I think everybody is welcome and valid to have these feelings. But just taking a step back and giving yourself a little pep talk and saying like, yeah, that's it's fine that you feel that way, but everything's going to be okay. They're, you know, keeping perspective. Again, another 5-star rambly answer.
So I don't think that your answers are rambly. What I really like about your answers is that they are messy and they are very Robin Williams-esque, and that you kind of jump to these different logical conclusions. And I think a lot of us do that. I think anyone listening to you can hear how your each question I'm asking you is pushing your brain in three different directions, and you're trying to go in all three. And I think that's actually very admirable in that you managed to keep it into somewhat of a coherent thought. And I mean, here's another great subject that we can dive to, which is, you know, when you do have a brain that is pushing you all over the place, you know, how do you manage to follow all the threads?
Some people, maybe medication, probably, which is all good and gravy. I am someone so in my thoughts, and I think it's I kind of like, I have a love-hate relationship with doing this podcast, because the stuff that we're talking about, I think about all the time. And I like thinking about myself and my brain. It used to be something where I would kind of shut it out, like, don't think about that. Just live your life. Just try to live your life like a normal person. But I think one of the beautiful things about getting older is learning yourself, learning who you are and what makes you tick, and thinking through all these things. I will say I'm not good about talking about myself and my innermost thoughts. Or
I think that's one of the great parts about getting someone who is quote-unquote internet famous onto a podcast like this, is that people can get to see that you're just a person. You get nervous. You're obviously nervous now because you're talking about yourself. And, you know, I think people can relate to that. I think we all feel those nerves. I have given at least, I'd say at this point, 250 speeches publicly, and I still get nervous every single time I do it. I mean, you turn it off and you just go do the thing because you have to, but I still get nervous. I'm sure you do too.
Oh yeah. I don't think that I'm somebody that was truly meant to be doing what I'm doing. Like my husband, he is like a wonderful extrovert. He has such a great presence. He's like a consummate performer. I feel just like I am this flesh bag that got like tossed onto the wrong back of a, like there were two pickup trucks driving parallel, and I got tossed on the back of one. And I was thinking about when Forrest Gump, he kind of gets caught in a wave of people.
Yep.
And then he gets taken somewhere where he, and, you know, and then he's standing next to JFK or whatever. That's how I feel a lot, is like I was never meant to be going this way, but I'm going this way and I'm gonna make it work. Like when I was younger, I had such terrible just anxiety when it came to like standing up in front of a group of people and talking or doing anything. And the thing that I think about a lot and tell people is, you can have that and you can get over it. And it's just going to be, you have to keep doing it and doing it. And growth never comes from staying in your comfort zone. And that's like so cliche to say, but I feel on a deeply personal level that it's so true, because I spent a great deal of my life never breaking out of a comfort zone for fear and just not thinking that I was capable. And once you start breaking down that wall, it's like just little like crumbles, and you keep chipping away and you chip away. And then eventually the wall is, maybe it's not going to be gone, but it might be like plexiglass.
That's right.
Or it might, it's see-through. It might be like, yeah.
That's my favorite saying, or at least one of them, is the only time change occurs is when the pain of changing is less than the pain of staying the same.
Yes. I have heard that, and I also love that as well.
It's maybe one of the most on-the-nose quotes I have ever heard, because people say they're good to change, or they say they don't like change, or they say they fear change, but it doesn't matter how you view yourself, because that sentence still rings true, you know? And I think that's, you know, one of the things we all can relate to, especially, you know? Do you feel like fate exists?
In terms of agency, free will versus fate, providence, I really, really, really try to put myself in the agency, free will camp, because I do think like the passive act of just being like, well, whatever will happen, isn't always the most productive. Uh-huh. You know, if you could change your fate, would you? You know, Brave. the one great thing we got out of Brave was that line. I do think there's something to be said for take reins of your life and push yourself beyond that. I think some people, they sit in that comfort zone and they think, well, life's going to take me where it's going to take me. And that doesn't always work out. It's not always the approach that's going to actually have results for you. But I guess it's like a more romantic perception that I like to think that there are some things that are like, that are fated, maybe because it makes it feel easier. What do you think, Steve?
It's not, podcast is not about me, but you know,
I hate this podcast.
I know it's the best. I love this podcast. You know, so here's the way that I view the universe is that there's a parable in the Bible, basically, of this person drowning in the ocean and asking for help, and a bunch of boats keep coming by and offering to be the rescuers, and the person keeps refusing, God's gonna help me, and then they drown. And when they get to heaven, they say, well, I thought you were gonna rescue me, and God says, I sent you a tugboat and a lifeboat and a helicopter. What more did you want? And I feel like that is a great parable for life, because maybe the help doesn't come in the form that you think it will, but maybe there is something that does come along the way. And I think, you know, you and I are great examples of that, right? You fell in love and you ended up finding a career that you're great at. And I was not looking to be an accessibility consultant in the video game industry, and yet now I'm sitting here talking to Elise Willems. And you know, sometimes the universe just provides. And I think that you have to be ready to capitalize. You know, you have to be at a spry point in your life where when an opportunity comes, you're ready to pounce on it.
I couldn't agree more. I also think, maybe I'm generalizing too much, but I do think that as people get older, they tend to get more cynical.
Yeah.
But I actually feel like I'm trying to be less cynical the older I get.
Positivity.
Because I, pardon?
Being positivity, bringing it into your life.
Yeah. I mean, I still think that like, there are times that with humor when you're roasting somebody and it's like, that burn feels so good. I do think, like, you don't really get anywhere with cynicism.
No, you don't. And I think one of the hardest parts about positivity, and I would love to know your views on this. People think of positivity, they think, you know, PMA, Jacksepticeye, great friend of mine, love the guy. But I sometimes do take exception to his mantra of PMA, and that sometimes people take it to that you always have to be happy. And I don't think that's what positivity is about. I think positivity is about always bringing yourself back out of the shallows when you have to. What do you think?
I have read a lot about like this. I think people are talking about it more, this toxic positivity. Yeah. And some of that is the feeling like your negative experience can't be valid because it's not as bad as somebody else's negative experience. Yeah. And this kind of one-upmanship, or feeling like, well, it could be worse. And I say all these things, I don't at all want to sound like I'm preaching, because I definitely don't at all times, or even close to, practice these things that I preach. I'm just trying. But I'm so guilty of saying, you know, things could be worse when something's bad. Mm-hmm. And I think that having perspective is important, but also being like, yeah, it's okay if I'm wallowing a little bit right now. Or we talked about people pleasing earlier, but you know, a big part of people pleasing, I think, is feeling like you cannot live in the experience of maybe feeling sad because you want other people to feel comfortable. And that's something that I definitely do, where I do feel like I try to be chipper and happy to people. And it's almost like the people that keep the even keel are the ones who have it easier.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you're happy all the time, it's a more drastic change if somebody sees a side of you where maybe you aren't happy.
I would agree with that. What about those times where you've made somebody unhappy with your life choices or decisions? You know, has there been a couple times that have stood out that have taught you valuable life lessons, even though it was a dark time?
Yeah, I think there are times where, like, I definitely could have been more empathetic to people in my life, or just try to see people's perspectives beyond my own more. I'm really on the growth train, so I'm really trying to feel like I'm becoming a better person every day. But I know that there are times when I haven't been, and also it's like reconciling the idea that that's okay if you don't feel like you're always morally towing the line, or, you know, have those shortcomings. I'm trying to think of like a specific thing, but
I think we have to be able to grow as people. And, you know, it's a shame that everything has turned into the, you know, cancel culture, you know, oh, cancel culture is bad, and we look past the things, you know, and now it's just it's almost a meme at this point, where it's just a term that we throw around constantly, where you have to be allowed to mess up now and again. You have to grow at some point. And again, you don't change until something hurts, and then you learn from it and you grow. And, you know, that's something that I think we all can agree that it's something we should all be striving to be the best person that we can. And that's, again, part of the reason for this podcast. You know, what is it that you, looking back on your life, especially, you know, in the last 10 years, where you're like, you know what, I feel like if this hadn't happened, even though it did suck, it made me grow up a little bit. Is there a time in your life where you can sort of look back and go, you know, I'm not glad this happened, but I'm glad at least I got this lesson out of it?
I'm trying to think. Sorry. We made a show at Rooster Teeth called Arizona Circle. That was like a sketch comedy series, and I was really, really proud of. And it didn't like perform as well as we had hoped it would. And, you know, coming out the other side, I was like pretty down on the fact that that didn't happen, or it just didn't take off. But I try more and more to look back at it and be like, well, I got so much out of doing this show. And it brought, like, looking back, there's a lot of like joy that I seeing it. I learned a lot. And yeah, I'm really trying to like think of life more as a constant, never-ending learning experience the older I get, because I think that I used to have this mentality of when I was younger of like, you know, in the inexperience of youth,
there you go.
I used to feel like, well, I'll get to this point where I just feel like I get it, and that's gonna be it, and then I'm gonna be this great person, and I'm gonna keep living my life. And now I'm very much in the mindset of like, well, I don't want to be the same person that I was 5 years ago or 5 years before that. I don't want to be the same person I was 5 months ago. I want to feel like I'm just ever evolving, and I want to look back and not necessarily not recognize myself, but I want to see that change in who I am more and more. And I want to feel like I'm going to be 85 and I'm still going to feel that way is what I hope. I want to feel like I'm still learning something.
What are the qualities you want to be when you grow up, quote unquote?
This is such a dumb thing, but like, I think, you know, a lot of people have kids because you like you want to have somebody that's going to love you, take care of you. You want to have someone who it's an unconditional love. You know, parents have unconditional love for their kids, and then you know you hope that it would be reciprocated to you. I don't know that I'll ever have kids. I have no idea, but this sounds so dumb, but like just feeling like, you know, we have a lot of friends who like have kids now, and the feeling of like someday being that like cool non-biological aunt that like my friend's kid looks at, and like there's no expectation or need for this person to like have that feeling, like, yeah. So I think like making an impact on somebody else's life in that way where there's no like tied expectation for this person to feel that way, like, and you know, in friendships too, I hope for that. It's such a weird answer. Oh. What a weird answer. It just popped into my brain.
Hey, it's your answer. So it's, you know, the great thing about being weird is it's only weird if the other person thinks it is. And, you know, I think.
And you do.
I don't. I think that as a society, we could do a lot better by just letting people have their ramble trains. And, you know, I would love to know your thoughts as well on, you know, if you had that kind of mystical, you know, Avengers power, you know, what is something about yourself that you would change right now? Snap your fingers, it's just different.
Do you know what yours is, Steve?
Yeah, I personally wish that I could get a better handle on when I lose my cool and someone gets underneath my armor, because I've developed such strong armor against internet trolls and people getting to me that when something finally does get through, it definitely triggers that, like, I will burn you to the ground now. And, you know, and so I've worked really hard on quieting that side of my personality. And, you know, I think that we all kind of go through that where we're trying to grow up, as you said, and be better people.
Maybe this doesn't directly answer the question, but I feel like I'm trying to be better about, people pleasing. I think by nature, you have this feeling of like you meet somebody new and you really want to like impress that new person. I think what I'm trying to do more is really the people that have been in my life for the long term, like that same feeling that I would have of wanting this new person to like me, or like I want to take that energy and like apply it more, you know, because I think you fall into those traps where with especially old friends or people in your life, it's a comfort thing, and you know, you don't have to work as hard with those relationships.
True.
But I'm trying to like refocus that energy backwards. For the power, I wish I slept better.
I like how far that went. I wish I was a better person. And also, I could get sleep. That'd be great.
Because I do think, sleep, I think, has so much to do with how your interpersonal interactions and stuff. And I do think if I slept better, I'd be less grumpy. I'd be more caring to other people because I wouldn't be focused on my own mental state.
Mental health is important. What do you do to reset your mental health?
Honestly, this podcast has been really great because it's like it's been a dump of all the things that I internalize and never say to a soul. I'm just inexplicably saying to you today, Steve, and I guess thousands of other people listening, watching.
That's what we're here for.
I like to be in nature a lot. I do think I'm like a pretty outdoorsy person, so I like to just go see things that put into perspective how minuscule I am in the universe. Like, as cliche as it is, what else do I do to reset? I like to read because it feels like something that's just like very personal. It's not like I'm watching Loki tonight and I'm navigating the opinions of all these other people around me. It's just kind of like I'm just doing this and it's insular and it's for me. Being around animals, whether it's like my dog or other people's animals that I stalk. What else, man? I'm trying to think.
Do you feel like that energy, you know, the cute animal pictures and the reading and the kind of letting yourself recharge, does that help keep the creative side of you going, or is it just the mental health side?
Probably just the mental health side. Though, I mean, something like reading, you know, obviously you get inspired by what other people do. Something I just thought of now is also eating. Like, I love to eat. I treat every meal like it's going to be my last one.
Aww.
which, like, James is always like, you got to get out of that mentality. Because every time we're, like, going out to eat or something, I'm like, it has to be the best. And he's like, no, it doesn't. But, yeah, I for me also, just going out for a nice meal, enjoying it. I'm 65 years old, basically, is what I'm trying to tell you. Really, it's weird.
You really enjoy the early bird specials. Is really good for you.
I do. I work in, like, YouTube, which is such a... And I think about a lot of people that are my peers in this field, and they're so cool and all the things that they do. And I'm like, I am very much not that. And that's okay. That's really okay. That's another thing too, Steve. Yeah, now that I'm unloading and I'm, like, really comfortable here, and I'm just cutting loose. I do think there was, like, a big point in my life where I'm like, okay, well, you know, it's a real rat race, and you've got to keep up, and especially in, like, gaming, because it's this idea of you've got to be playing, like, specific games or meeting this kind of perception. There are a lot of games that, like, I appreciate, but I'm not really necessarily going to play. Mm-hmm. And I play a lot of games that probably to a lot of people are not as exciting, or, like, they're kind of lame, maybe, but to them. But I'm kind of at the point where I'm like, I don't fucking care, man. this is what I like. I'm sorry.
How do you stop worrying about the numbers?
You just have to stop worrying if people think that, you know, you don't like whatever the popular shooter is.
Yeah.
It's okay, because, like, just like what you like. I also think, like, as, you know, a woman, there's definitely that expectation of, like, you've got to prove yourself in the gaming industry. And so it's been a while where I've had that feeling of, like, well, I need to prove myself with my gaming cred, because I really don't give a flying fuck anymore. Because I just enjoy video games and love them, and I might not be good at them, and I might play ones that someone else might not even consider a video game, but I am very, very comfortable in my own thoughts and feelings about it.
So what do you say to that lady out there, the disabled person out there, the human out there that feels like they have to prove themselves? How do you slam your foot into the wall of you're beating yourself up?
Man, I wish I knew what the right thing to say was. Because, like, for a long time, I didn't know the right thing to say to myself about feeling that way. But I just think that you'll have a moment when you look back and you think, well, who was I living and being this person for? And I hope you're always living and being for yourself, because you will not look back and think, oh, well, I earned this credibility. I felt like I demeaned myself. So the people whose opinions shouldn't matter, I could validate myself in their eyes. You know, mm-hmm. that's the big thing too, is, like, a lot of these the people that you feel like you have to validate, they're garbage. don't feel like you have to be validated by them, because you do not.
You have to validate yourself in this world, and there's a lot of us who are after that validation, and there's a lot of people who have more going against them in the world, that you have to wonder, what do they feel as well? And, you know, for every check mark you can put off, if you're a person of color, if you're a woman, if you're disabled, there's lots of things that you can keep checking off that make life a difficulty of hard. And I think part of one of the things that we learn on this podcast, you know, with Elise here, is that you have to be willing to live outside of that mold. You have to be willing to go above and beyond. And I think that's personally a great place to bring this part of the podcast to a close, as we've well shot past our 50-minute window.
Sorry.
I told you, we get talking, and it just kind of keeps going. And I think this is great. You know, something that you can really help with the people out there, you know, when you're looking for your creative life and you're trying to figure out what's next, and should you do it, and do I have to find someone to follow their footsteps? You know, what do you say to that person who's out there and just trying to get started and trying to get a foothold in this industry?
I think you're going to get farther if you stay true to yourself, above all, and look for the good people. There's that adage of, you know, surround yourself with people that are better than you to be better. That is really important. But also just look for the people that have good hearts, because that's what it comes down to.
It's not what you know, it's who you know. And I like that. So, we come to the part of the podcast where I now give you rapid fire questions. I'm not going to interject. I'm not going to react. And you're on your own for these questions. You can.
This is the worst podcast I've ever been
can't
on.
Can't wait to bring you back. It is. It is 10 rapid fire questions. You can take as long or as little to answer. Are you ready for the rapid fire round?
No. Good. Let's start.
Let's do it. What's your favorite color?
Okay. For so much of my life, my favorite color was blue. And some of that is because I do really like blue. Like, if you're in my home, you're like, okay, look, there's a lot of stuff in here that's blue. Some of that, I'm like, was I subconsciously rallying against the idea that there are colors that are feminine? And I'm trying not to fall into that category. As I explore these things, I'm trying to broaden my sense of what colors I like. I like yellow a lot, too. I have this water bottle that's yellow. Sometimes when I drink from it, people think it is a mustard container. Yeah, these are the things I think about all the time. Next question.
What's your least favorite color?
I'm not a big red person. Don't really like red.
What's the best thing you've ever tasted?
Grilled halloumi is really, really good. And you can't ever really do it bad. And it's so simple. Like, I could do it if I needed to.
Literally no idea what that is.
Okay. It's just cheese, but it's like, it's usually, they grill it.
Wait, so it's a grilled cheese, but you just do away with the bread?
Yeah. Basically, it's a rubbery cheese.
That sounds great and horrifying. Anyway, okay. So what's the worst thing you've ever tasted?
Oh, that's been bad. I hate to say it, but I did go for vegan sushi once. It was a friend's birthday, and she has a lot of restrictions, but she's also vegan. And so it was a distinctly vegan sushi place. I was not impressed. That's not a knock to veganism, because the impact that, you know, eating vegan has on animals and the environment, I very much am all kudos to vegans, but I wasn't digging that sush.
Okay. Have you ever loved somebody?
Yes. Yes. I loved humans, and I've also loved animals.
Have you ever hurt somebody?
Yes. I have. More than one person. I hope that I hurt Steve when I tell him I'm not coming back on this podcast.
Devastated.
I was kidding.
What can somebody do to earn your trust?
Oh, wow. This is tough.
I told you they ramp.
Yeah, because I do think, like, you know, part and parcel of being somebody with social anxiety is in some ways I'm like a puppy because I'm a people pleaser. So if you're nice to me, I'll be nice to you. But in other ways, like, you're worried especially if you've been hurt before in your life, you're worried about letting people close or in or trusting them. For me, somebody that, like, just genuinely wants to spend time with me one-on-one and there's no, like, expectation of what are they getting out of this friendship, I think just, like, goes a long way for me.
So how does somebody lose your trust?
I think, like, you know, lying, gaslighting, you know, or, like, hurting somebody I care about are easy, quick fire ways.
If someone spoke to you the way that you speak to yourself when no one's around, would you be friends with that person?
No. Absolutely. This is a great question. No, absolutely not. There are people that are friends with me. They're, you know, backseat passengers to this experience. And I'm like, why would you? No. No, I am trying to get better about how I talk to myself. But and I'm the, like, the worst at, like, giving somebody else grace or a pep talk in a way that I would never give myself. But I'm trying to get better.
If you died tomorrow, what do you hope people would remember you for?
Probably the puppet stuff. I would hope. If I died tomorrow, I would hope that you, my friends, everybody, bring a puppet to the funeral. Whatever you, I would definitely want it to be like a joyful experience of not even celebrating me, but of, like, just people doing something joyful and good. Like, bring a puppet to the funeral. We're all going to be led in a specific puppet activity. Maybe there's an Elise puppet that's going to pop up behind that casket. I say casket, but that's just a rental because I'm definitely just, I want my body to melt back into the earth. So yeah, I would say puppets.
Oh man, that's a great answer. So the big question, this is what it was all leading to.
Oh no.
Do you have a personal life philosophy that you would attribute to getting you where you are today?
No, I think that I was always like a pretty hardworking person to the point where like my mom used to and still will, like when I talk to her, will worry about it. Cause when I was younger, she was like, worry about you and always working. And I don't think that's healthy. I actually don't think that's like something that I should impart and say like, yeah, work hard, because I think that you can lose a lot if you work too hard. And I think that like a lot of the life philosophies I'm trying to take on more later in my life. I wish I had a good answer, because I think there was like a big part of my life where I wasn't like having healthy life philosophies. If I'm being completely honest, I was just kind of like throwing myself time and again onto, you know, out there and really trying to just make things happen and to the point of like exhaustion, or, you know, where I wasn't feeling healthy. And I don't, what a sad point to end the podcast at the end. What a sad final question.
Elise, do you think some things are better left unsaid?
What do you think, Steve? I think about 80% of this podcast, I think if we can cut around me, this is going to be a really great podcast. It's going to be some prime Steve.
Elise, thank you for coming on. My name is Steve. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Steve.